Welcome back to the Dentistry Online podcast series. Today, I'm speaking to Tom Ryle, the Chief Executive Officer at My Dentist, which operates more than 600 practices across the UK. We are going to be discussing the implications of the COVID-19 crisis and how My Dentist are managing its impact on staff, practice and business. So obviously we are currently in the middle of a very confusing and unsettling time, and not just for the dental industry, but internationally too. How has My Dentist and its practices been dealing with the pandemic?
Gabby, I think what I want to say first off is this has been clearly a time of huge worry for everybody, both across the country as well as the sector. And it's a time of worry for your personal safety, safety of your families, and indeed your personal finances. But I do think that the dental sector as a whole has risen to the challenges quite brilliantly. And then equally, when I look at my own organisation, I think in particularly our clinicians, our practice managers and our practice staff, who after all are the people on the front line, have come together for each other, have looked out for each other, have supported each other, and have so far come through this absolutely brilliantly. And I've just got nothing but praise for them at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the dental industry in particular, given that it is a health profession, has been hit quite hard. What were the initial reactions? You know, did you see it going in this direction when it started up, or was it something that you just really didn't anticipate?
Yeah, I don't think we had any appreciation of how quickly this would escalate and how much it would just change the face of dentistry in the UK. And it has been changing almost day by day. So when you think about it, it was only 3 weeks ago that most practices in this country were still doing routine operations. And we then moved from there to a position where we weren't doing routine operations. We were doing emergency treatments only with non-aerosol generating procedures. We then moved from there to a situation where in England, we've got now a network of UDCs being developed, with the rest of our practices moving to triage only. And so you've had this continually evolving landscape. And again, I think that people have responded to that. They can see the reasons why those changes are being made. And on the whole, I think, again, the sector has responded really well throughout all of that uncertainty.
Definitely. And I mean, it goes further than just actual dentistry, doesn't it? I mean, it's about sort of a national effort and sort of keeping morale and spirits up, which, you know, dentistry is sort of right at the forefront of that in many ways, particularly those who might be volunteering or who might be, you know, helping out with the phone calls, the one-on-one phone calls. In terms of sort of, you know, spirit and morale, how have any of your practices been supporting local communities? How have they been sort of getting involved with the effort?
Yeah, so again, when I look right across My Dentist, I have been absolutely amazed and in awe of the efforts that have been made right across all of our practices. And every day I see examples of individuals or teams going the extra mile to support each other or to support their local communities. I've seen examples of practices that are now ringing round elderly patients who may be self-isolating just to check that they're okay. We've had examples of practice managers who've been doing shopping for some of their elderly patients because they're self-isolating and can't go out. We've had practices putting together little dental packages to send to patients so they can keep their oral hygiene going. We started 2 weeks ago, we started a My Dentist professional Facebook group. And in something like 3 days, we had over 3,000 followers. And this was an opportunity for people simply to post online what them and others have been doing to help and support each other. And again, you look at what people have been doing on that, and it's been really, really amazing. Yeah, I think not just for each other, but for local communities, it's been really impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, one thing we're going to take away from this is it's really brought people together, both within the profession and just sort of, you know, local communities as a whole. Obviously, there's that side of it, which is lovely. But there, unfortunately, is that kind of worrying side, particularly given the lack of PPE in some areas in the country. How have you been keeping practice teams and patients safe during this time?
I think my number one priority, and that of the business throughout all of this, has been our duty of care to our clinicians, our practice teams, and our patients. And whilst we have tried to follow the government guidance at every step, and that has been changing, we were quick to take decisions to move, first of all, to suspend routine treatments and to stop doing aerosol generating procedures. So we took that decision quickly. Secondly, I think we have been really quick to ensure that the changing what are called standard operating procedures, SOPs, are again communicated out literally on a daily basis to our clinicians. So they have been very clear what they should and shouldn't be doing, again, absolutely with their safety in mind. And then we have ensured that there is the appropriate PPE in place for day-to-day treatments. Now, I absolutely realise that enhanced PPE, and in particular the use of the FFP3 face mask, is a big, big issue across the sector as a whole at the moment. And it is clear to me that to ensure that our new network of UDCs operate correctly and in the spirit of which they are intended, the government is going to have to make additional PPE available. We are told that it is on its way and training has started, but we haven't yet seen it available at scale.
So that's been quite noticeable, has it? The lack of PPE that you've had access to?
Yeah, certainly the lack of what I call enhanced PPE. So normal PPE, which includes a fluid-resistant face mask, visors, aprons and gloves, that has been available throughout. But enhanced PPE, which is either the FFP2 or FFP3 mask for the operation of UDCs, we still yet to see coming through.
Do you have a lot of staff sort of working in the UDCs?
No, at this stage, I think only 6 of our practices so far have been designated as UDCs, with about another 6 being earmarked potentially in the Southwest.
I think it has been a bit of a slow start.
Correct. So the intention, I think, is to get to about 165 UDCs.
That's good.
Which will then give a coverage of about 80% of the UK population with a drive time of 30 minutes, maximum of 30 minutes, to their nearest UDC.
Oh, that's good. That means, you know, they're adhering to the social distancing rules as well. You know, it doesn't mean they have to travel.
Correct.
Significant distances, yeah. So that makes it easier for everybody, I think. As well as PPE, obviously there's finances that we have to take into consideration. The private side of dentistry, which has been hit pretty hard. Do you think the government has done enough to support dental practices and corporates? Have you got any concerns or worries at this moment?
I think that the NHS providers are feeling looked after. So those of us that are lucky enough to have substantial NHS contracts, the indications are that all 4 parts of the UK, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England, are going to continue those NHS payments, and indeed then providers will flow those payments through to their NHS clinicians. So I think we've got a reasonable degree of confidence around that, and we've been able to communicate that to our NHS dentists. It is, however, a worry for those clinicians who are predominantly whose incomes are derived predominantly from private dentistry, in that that isn't able to be supported in the same way. And again, what we've tried to do is to ensure that we are communicating to our private clinicians all of the relevant advice and help that is out there from the government. So there is a self-employed support scheme, which is designed to help self-employed people whose annual earnings fall under the £50,000 a year threshold. And again, for many private dentists, they are clearly above that cap and therefore aren't able to access that scheme. We've also seen, particularly for self-employed hygienists and therapists, again, whose incomes are derived privately, that if they are operating their own companies, then they are allowed to furlough themselves as part of that, what's called the coronavirus job retention scheme, or furloughing, as people will have known. So we're trying to access all the different schemes that are out there and make that advice available to our clinicians.
Have you come across any troubles with that yet, or is it all panning out okay so far?
It's very, very early days, and you think we only really went into this crisis 3 or 4 weeks ago. But I think so far people feel reassured that that dental providers are looking out for them and trying to get them the best outcomes that are possible, that are available at the moment from the government.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think reassurance at this stage is what people want. You know, in a time of uncertainty, just a little bit of a little bit of reassurance goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
The BDA has reported that some practices nationwide, around 70%, don't think they're going to survive for longer than 3 months. Do you think that any of your practices are going to need to close permanently?
So I saw that article in the Times, and from a My Dentist perspective, we're in a reasonably fortunate position in that 75% of our total revenues are NHS funded. And as I've said already, we think that that funding is going to continue to flow through. And then for the other part of the business, the 25% of our revenues that are privately funded, we have been able to furlough 25% of our payroll entirely through staff volunteering. So we haven't had to force anyone onto furlough. And that has been well received. So we think that we're in a relatively good position. We're also, of course, looking at all other opportunities for cost savings and deferring payments where possible. And again, one of the things we did right at the start of the crisis was to fully draw down on our overdraft facility. So it meant that we've got funds in our bank account, which again is helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
The big unknown, of course, is how long is the crisis going to last? And in terms of our own cash flow planning, we have really taken a base assumption of a 3 month lockdown period and then a 9 month ramp back up to what I call normal operations. And as long as that, and I think that's reasonably conservative. So as long as we're operating within those parameters, as an organization, we should be okay. But clearly everyone is going to come out of this with weakened balance sheets and higher levels of indebtedness. And that is something we are going to have to live with and manage in the longer term.
Yeah, it's something that's gonna impact everybody. I think one thing about dentistry is that there's always a need for it. People always going to need to come and have their teeth looked at. People always going to have problems with their teeth. So yeah, I think that's something that's quite reassuring, I can imagine.
Agree.
Okay, so just off the back of that, what steps are being taken to protect the jobs of practice teams?
So again, I think all dental providers, including ourselves, are looking at what support there is available from the government. And the biggest help clearly has been the NHS continuing to make their payments, so continued funding of NHS contracts. And then the other big help has been the job retention scheme, or the ability to furlough. Again, the NHS have clarified that dental providers are entitled to furlough the percentage of your workforce that is equivalent to the percentage of your revenues that are derived from private dentistry. So those are the two big things that have helped. On top of that, as I've said already, I think everyone is looking at all possible options for reducing your costs at this stage, deferring payments. And then equally, of course, we're starting to think about how we then bounce back and get out the other side of this with maximum momentum as and when the restrictions are lifted.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. We have no idea.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of you said some of your practices have been selected as designated UDCs. And I can imagine some of your staff also have been, you know, put themselves forward for volunteering as well. But for those people who aren't doing, who aren't volunteering or aren't helping out the UDCs, they're like us guys, they're stuck at home. So, I mean, CPD is one thing that a lot of people can turn to, because obviously in this day and age, there's a lot of online based CPD. It doesn't have to be face to face. What support is my dentist giving in that regard?
Yeah, so we're, again, my dentist is fortunate in that we've got our own training academy, and we've always thought that is one of the jewels in our crown. And it indeed is, I think, one of the reasons why young dentists choose to join us, because of the training that we can offer them and the ongoing training that we can offer. What we've now just launched is the My Dentist Virtual Academy. And so we have put a lot of that training now online. So for our clinicians, we're now offering for the first time for free GDC recognized CPD training, which they can all access. I think we offer something like 200 modules of CPD, which cover pretty well all core aspects of dentistry. So that is available for them. And then on top of that, we're offering a whole range of other training courses. So our student nurses, for example, can continue to complete all of the theoretical aspects of their nurse training. And our practice managers have access to a range of other training programs, such as leadership development, and even some simple things about how to run your day-to-day practice. And you know, my hope is that people will really make the most of the time that is available to them to get ahead of their CPD. So again, when we get going again, they don't have to, it's not something that they've got to worry about.
So what you're really saying is that although actual routine dentistry and normal practice has stopped, there are opportunities here for people to keep learning, keep developing, so that when they do come back into the practice setting, they wouldn't have lost out too much.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunity isn't just to keep learning, the opportunity is actually to get ahead. So I think with CPD, for example, you have to do so much CPD over a 5-year period. So there is nothing stopping you now really getting a huge amount of that in the bank now, so that you don't then have to worry about ongoing CPD for the next couple of years.
No, of course, that's really helpful. And, you know, we've got to use this time. Which use this time wisely, I guess, and be productive where we can. And I've seen online and spoken to some people, you know, CPD, just trying to, just like you said, get ahead, just anything to just occupy themselves, because I think otherwise be climbing the walls a little bit. So particularly as there's no end date to the lockdown. What advice would you give to clinicians and practice owners to help them get through the next few months?
I think a couple of things. Perhaps first and foremost, it is just to look after your people and your practice teams. And that is making sure that you're communicating regularly. In our case, literally daily, we have different messages going out. I've been doing video broadcasts and we've been doing webinars and posting clinical updates. So look after your people, because how we behave and act now will be remembered for many, many years to come. I think the second message is to keep following the advice and guidance that is coming out from different quarters, including from the government, but most of all, perhaps from the BDA. And I do think that Martin Woodrow, who's the newly appointed chief exec of the BDA, has been doing a really great job in terms of standing up and representing the profession, and is doing a good job representing us in terms of the discussions that have been ongoing with the government. So I think those are two really key messages that I would give to any principal of a dental practice. And then perhaps thirdly and lastly, start thinking now about the relaunch. because it is going to happen. We are going to get out the other side of this crisis, and we need to be really well prepared for that so we can actually start capturing some of that pent-up demand that will be out there for dentistry. You know, there will be people who have been storing up dental issues, whose oral health may have deteriorated during the lockdown, and will be really keen to see their dentist when we come out the other side of this. So my third piece of advice is start thinking about it now and make sure you're well prepared.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, what have you guys been doing? What's your, I know it's quite difficult to anticipate when and how this is going to end, but like you said, it is going to finish at some point. So what's your exit plan?
Well, the question I've been asked more than any other is how long is this going to last, and when are the restrictions going to lift? And the honest answer, none of us know the answer to that yet. But if I look at China, for example, where they closed all dental practices in China for 3 months, and now I think 90% of all DSOs, dental service organizations in China, are now reopened and are back at work. So I do think that it won't be too long before dentistry starts again. It may be in a reduced way to start with. So it may be that when we first go back, we're going to have to observe different ways of operating, greater social distancing in our practices, maybe additional PPE, and of course, things like greater focus on infection control, sterilization of individual surgeries, and so on. But then clearly beyond that, we need to ensure that our teams are well prepared, well trained, to meet the demand that is certainly out there. And as you've said already, dentistry is one of those things. It is a public need, and it is one of those things that is simply not going to go away. So as particularly the big DSOs, we need to ensure that we are well geared up and well prepared for that.
In terms of long-term impact, which, like everything in the world, this is going to have a significant impact on dentistry and the way dentistry is carried out. What do you think the industry can take away from this? And I'm talking, you know, both positive and negative here, because I think it's important to remember there are some positives that are going to come of this. You know, do you think people are going to work more remotely? Is there anything, how do you think dentistry will change?
I think it's still really too early to tell exactly what the lasting impact of this is going to be on the sector. I think the sort of one permanent for me that I can already take away from this is just what brilliant people we have working for my dentist, and how well they've responded, how well they've been there for each other, and how they've stood up and supported their local communities. So that is something maybe that even as the chief exec, I hadn't quite appreciated. Undoubtedly, there are going to be changes, I suspect, and I've touched on one or two of those already in terms of a greater focus on infection control, potentially enhanced PPE. Those are all things that are, again, potentially we're going to need to think about coming out the other side of this. And then I do think that potentially the well-organized and well-led DSOs potentially may come out of this in better shape, because they have been able to properly put their arms around their people, to communicate with them, ensure that they are looked after. And indeed, it may be that there will be smaller, independently owned practices that would see the opportunity now to potentially see a sale of their business to a larger corporate. So who knows quite how it's going to shake up in the outcome, but I do think that those organizations that have been well led and have looked after their people will come out of this stronger on the other side.
I think that's probably something that people want to hear right now, in all honesty, you know, in a climate where good news is not too common. I think it's quite nice to hear some reassurance, like I said earlier.
No, look, I mean, there's been a lot of chat in the bazaars around, you know, how the NHS have responded. And I think the only thing I'd want to say around that is I don't want to be someone who is pointing the finger or casting blame on anyone. None of us expected to be where we are today. I think that our NHS has responded brilliantly to this crisis. I cannot imagine the pressure that the leaders in the NHS must be under right now. And look, they may not always have responded as quickly as the profession would have liked, but I do believe that they are acting in the best interests of all of us, the patients and their own different providers. And you know, I would just want to say a thank you actually to both to the NHS and the profession as a whole for everything that they have done getting us to where we are today.
No, absolutely. It's a joint effort. And I think that right now, I think it's very much about getting through this as a nation and hoping that everybody comes out the other side in as best, as good a shape as possible, really.
Yeah, agreed.
My final question, so I'm going to ask this to every podcast guest we have. What do you like doing outside of dentistry? Is there something that people don't know about you that you could tell us now?
I'm a very bad cyclist, so the one thing I've really missed is getting out on my bike, and I had a couple of cycling trips lined up for this year, obviously, which I've now had to cancel. But funny enough, working from home a bit, I spend most of my life on the road, as you can imagine, running a big multi-site business. I probably spend 2 or 3 nights at least a week in a hotel. And so I have actually quite enjoyed spending a little bit of time at okay. home. And so that was something I hadn't expected. And then maybe the only other thing I feel I could share with the profession is at the start of this crisis a month ago, my son, who's in the army, was injured in Iraq. And so he was brought back to this country. He's fine. And again, the NHS were brilliant looking after him. But he's now at home with me and recovering. And so again, that's been quite a special time for me.
Lovely.
Being able to spend time with my son during his period of recovery.
Absolutely. And I saw online, forgive me if I'm wrong, you live on a farm, is that right?
Well, it's I wouldn't call it, it's called a farm.
It's called a farm,
we,
okay.
We don't have any animals. So
is it in the countryside?
It is, we're surrounded by
fields. That's farmy enough, I think, in terms of it's surrounded by fields. That's quite a nice place to, have you picked up any hobbies? Anything new that you've been trying?
No, I honestly, my only hobby that I've picked up has been how to use Teams and Zoom.
That's not a bad hobby to pick
you
up.
Can imagine. It's been a period of incredibly hard work. I was talking to my HR director last week and she said the last 3 weeks has probably been the most intense period of her working life.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's been very busy.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on.
Very good. No, and thank you. And thank you for your CPD event that you put on. I think that's been massively appreciated by the profession.
Yeah, we hope so. We hope so.